Last week we were talking about the role of water in terms of the Malach of Zareah, so we spent a lot of time talking about whether one can violate the prohibition of planting if one is not planting in soil, if one is merely quote-unquote planting in water. So there's one last point I want to just mention from last week's shiur before we move on to some other aspects of the Malach of Zareah, the Malach of planting. We spoke last week about the Shittas Rambam. If a person puts something into water and it begins to sprout, to open up, so that's a potential Malacha Min HaTorah of Zareah, even though there's no ground involved. We spoke about all the parameters of that statement. There is one question that there are more raises about what if a person puts flowers into a water. What would that halacha be? So a person takes a bouquet of flowers, somebody arrives late Friday afternoon with your bouquet of flowers and forgot to put it in before Shabbos, and now you want to put it on Shabbos itself. Would that be the halacha equivalent of putting seeds into water that the seeds sprout? So the Rama says that one is not supposed to do that. That to put flowers into water, that the flowers are going to buzz, they're going to open up, is a problem. But it's not 100% clear just how much of a problem the Rama is referring to. So the Shabbos Kilchosa quotes the name of his Rebbe, the name of Shlomo Zalman, who suggested that that is not really a deraisa. That is not the equivalent of what we've been speaking about for the last 2 weeks, when something is literally growing, something is literally taking sprouting and rooting, but rather this is merely the flowers are not going to grow new flowers. All that's going to happen is that the buds are going to open up a little bit. So Shlomo Zalman suggests that although it's prohibited because it gives off the impression of Zareah, but to say that it's absolute real bona fide Zareah, so he thought was not correct. So therefore, the halacha one shouldn't do that. You should put your flowers into the water from before Shabbos. But if you did it, so you don't have to clock a big achet, just a small achet. The worst of it was in the Sidra Rabbanan, but it wasn't, most probably wasn't in the Sidra Raisa. But now we get back to what we really wanted to speak about this morning in terms of the role of water as relates to the Malach of Zareah. So the Gemara tells us in Maseches Moikotan that if a person is mashke es hazroim, if a person waters already seeds or plants or grass for our purposes, so mashke es hazroim is a very serious problem on Shabbos, and that would be tantamount to a Malach of Zareah. It is not 100% clear in the Rishonim whether we are dealing with an av malacha or whether we're dealing with a told of a malacha. Now, we haven't even really introduced those phrases yet. It's strange that giving a shiur and up a Shabbos today for the third week, and we probably haven't even mentioned the difference between av and told of. The reason why we haven't done it, because it may take a whole shiur in of itself to talk about it. So as we go on, we're going to keep on dropping hints about some of the possible differences between av and told of. But suffice it to say, there are 39 main categories of Shabbos, and then each one of those main categories has certain subcategories. For 99% of the time, there is no difference la'halacha between avos and toldos. They are considered to be deraisa. So if something meets the criteria of being a bona fide tolda, then it would be prohibited on a level of deraisa. So it probably doesn't make all that much practical difference for us whether mashke es hazroim is an av malacha, whether it's considered to be the actual malacha of planting itself, or whether it's almost a lower down to the level of being a tolda. If you live bizman shebeis hamikdash hakayim and you violate multiple chatosas at the same time, so then you can begin to scratch your head and try to figure out whether you violated an av and a tolda. But that's it's going to be also in a Torah mashke es hazroim. Why should there even be a question whether it's an av or a tolda? So this touches on a more global question, which again, hopefully as we continue learning from Shabbos, we're going to keep on coming back to. How exactly do you define the differences between avos and toldos? If everything is also in a Torah, so how do you know whether something is an av or whether something is a tolda? So this is a major machlokes every Rishonim do. Some Rishonim will take a very, very limited scope of the definition of avos, and they focus everything upon Mishkan. If this particular action was done in the Mishkan, that and only that is considered to be an av. Anything that was not literally done in the Mishkan, even though it looks like the Mishkan and smells like the Mishkan and tastes like the Mishkan, that phrase, if it looks like a dach, walks out, is not true, according to some Rishonim. Just because it looks like an av, it's got all the similarities to an av, but Tata's bottom line, if Bezalel didn't do it in the Mishkan, it's not going to be considered to be an av. That's the view that the Ritva quotes such a view of Masechet Shabbos, the Kesavisha quotes such a view, the name of the Ramach, one of the Rishonim, Moshe Koyim, such a view in Ilcha Shabbos. And for this reason, actually, even vis-a-vis the Malach of Zareah, many Rishonim say that there are many activities that are done involved with agriculture that are just not literally considered to be avos. There was some Rishonim who say that even if one plants a sapling, one plants a tree, that Chazal used the phrase noteya, so the Rishonim will say that's not an av. What did it do that on Shabbos? But an av malach it's not going to be, again, whatever those parameters, whatever those differences may happen to be. And the reason being that Zeroyim seeds were planted, trees weren't planted for the purposes of the Mishkan. And therefore, anything and everything, no matter how similar it is, cannot possibly be an av, according to some Rishonim. The Rambam, however, does not take that view. The Rambam takes a much more expansive view of the definition of an av. And the Rambam says that pretty much anything that has a similar tachlis, something that was done for the similar purpose of the Mishkan, even though that particular pa'ula, that particular ma'isa was not actually practiced in the Mishkan, that can also qualify as an av. According to that all-expansive view of the Rambam, then we run into a little bit of a problem when we speak of Mashkez Rahim, because it happens to be the Rambam who says that Mashkez Rahim is only a tolda. The Rambam says that watering your plants, watering your seeds, watering your field, watering your grass is awesome in a Torah on Shabbos, but it would only be to the degree of a tolda that wouldn't qualify as an av. The question is, according to the Rambam's all-inclusive understanding of toldos and avos, that anything that resembles an av, even to the extent of being a different action, but it's similar in tachas, it's similar in purpose. So the purpose of watering grass is to make something grow. So the purpose of planting is to make something grow. So why wouldn't all watering of grass qualify as an av according to the Shittas Rambam? So the Tiferes Yisrael, in his introduction to Mishnayos and Masechta Shabbos, suggests that maybe there's another factor that's important. It's not only important what you're doing and why you're doing it, but what's important is what you are doing the malacha to. Namely, when it comes to planting, so I'm taking a seed, I'm putting the seed into the ground. So the malacha is taking place in the heftza of the seed. If I take a sapling and put it into the ground, so the malacha is taking place in the heftza of the plant. When it comes to watering, so the seed is 20 feet away from me, I'm holding a watering can, I'm turning on a sprinkler system, so I'm far removed from the item that's actually growing. So Tiferes Yisrael suggests maybe that's a factor to mitigate it and to lower it down to the point of being in a tolda. And again, halacha l'maaseh for us, it doesn't really make much of a difference, but just in terms of conceptually to understand what are avos, what are not tolda, what are avos, what are toldos, so the Rambam happens to put Mashkez Rahim into the toldos category. So again, halacha, there's no question, Mashkez Rahim, any and every kind of watering plants and seeds and grass is also in the Torah, whether it's literally an av, like some Rishonim, or told for other reasons, that's somewhat subject to a debate. The Gemara at the beginning of Maseches Ma'akotan continues the theme that we already spoke about a little bit last week, and that is when we speak about malachas on Shabbos, one of the things you always have to compare and contrast is how do these malachas play out in other areas of halacha. As we're going to see, hopefully, as we go through the Lamikas malachas, many of the malachas have applications in other areas. Let's say, Lamashal, when we speak about Bishol, so it is impossible to learn the Sugya Bishol on Shabbos without cross-referencing Bishol Basa B'cholov, or without cross-referencing the halachas of Bishol of Karban Pesach. When you learn the halachas of Kosev, it is impossible to learn Kosev without cross-referencing the halachas of Ksiva Sefer Torah, Tefillin Mezuzos, and Kohenah V'Kohenah. So many, many of the halachas have other areas where they also play. We spoke a little bit about this last week. We spoke a little bit about Zerias Kelayim, how that plays out in terms of Zereya and Shabbos. So here, when it comes to Mashkez Rahim, we have to ask the same question. The very first Mishnah in Maseches Ma'akotan tells us that one is permitted under certain circumstances to water one's crops on during the Shemitah year, which seems to be very striking, because if watering crops, watering grass, watering plants and seeds is considered to be Zereya, so the Torah says, considering Shemitah, Sadcha lo Sizra, you're not permitted to plant during Shemitah. So at first glance, we are drawing an equation between the halachas of Shemitah and the halachas of Shabbos. If it's called Zereya for Shabbos purposes, why isn't it called Zereya for Shemitah purposes? So that's a very, very strong question that Chazal themselves pose. Actually, the context that discussion begins the very beginning of Maseches Ma'akotan. Ma'akotan is not really dealing with Shemitah. Ma'akotan is really the first half of Ma'akotan. He's dealing with the halachas of Chol HaMoed. But at the very first sugya of Ma'akotan starts to compare and contrast some of the details of Chol HaMoed and Shemitah, which again ultimately touches on Shabbos. So just to familiarize ourselves for a moment, because it becomes important in understanding what Zereya is all about. So the Mishnah begins in the beginning of Ma'akotan by saying, Mashkin Beis HaShlochin, the moed of Shvius, that if a person has a field that has to be irrigated, otherwise the crops are going to die, so the Mishnah says one is permitted to irrigate one's field both on Chol HaMoed as well as during the Shemitah year. So the Gemara explains that on Chol HaMoed, that's very easy to understand, because that's a classic Dover Avei. This is the source, that Mishnah is the ultimate source for the principle that we all rely on today. We do many things on Chol HaMoed. Some things we do on Chol HaMoed not correctly, but many things that we do on Chol HaMoed are under the category of what's called the Dover Avei, that we're going to suffer a loss of monetary loss. So the Mishnah says that in order to prevent the person's crops from dying, he's allowed to do what would otherwise be a malach of zereha. He's allowed to do something that would otherwise on Shabbos and Yom Tov and Avos would be Asur, and Chol HaMoed is Mutter because of a Makom Hefzer, because of a Dover Avin. But what about a Shemitah? How do we explain Shemitah? The Gemara has a machlokes, yes, and the answer that we pass in halacha is that on Shemitah, the rules are different than on Shabbos. On Shabbos, so not only is absolute Zeriya Asur, but anything that smacks of Zeriya, anything that resembles Zeriya, planting trees and pruning trees and watering grass, all of the above are all considered to be problematic min HaTorah on Shabbos. When it comes to Shemitah, so we have a rule that only the things that are said explicitly in the Chumash are Asur. And the Torah only says, vis-a-vis Shemitah, Sadcha lo Sizra, Mecharmecha lo Sizmar. The Torah says you're not allowed to plant your seeds, and you're not allowed to prune your trees. The Torah doesn't say you're not allowed to water your grass. And therefore, Me'ika Mikra Din, Min HaTorah for sure, you're allowed to water all your crops during the Shemitah year. That was never included. So the definitions of Zereya for Shemitah and Shabbos are different, the Gemara says. Nevertheless, Mid the Rabbanim Chazal instituted that one is not allowed to do anything in the Shemitah year that improves the crops. And therefore, Mid the Rabbanim, one is not allowed to water one's grass. It's not allowed to do these things on Shemitah. But the Makom Hefzed, Hitiru Chachamim, that the Chachamim lifted this Issa de Rabbanan if there's a situation we're afraid that the crops are going to die. So the whole heter of all kind of different kinds of work during the Shemitah year, which are not deraisa work, if it's a deraisa tikkun malach, it's a sadcha lo sizra, then it's out of the question. But if it's other kinds of things that are not really deraisa, which are only derabbanan anyway, because the standards of Shemitah are different than the standards of Shabbos, so then the makom hefzed they become mutter. It's this first sugi of a second boycott, and the sugi is a little bit later on in Shas, that form the absolute background for everything that's done during the Shemitah year today. Many, many kibbutzim, many moshavim, many people who observe the halachas of Shemitah in their entirety without relying on any kulas. So what they basically do is follow these rules, namely those malachas that are going, those malachas that are also in the Torah, those are off limits, you can plant, you can plow, etc. But those malachas that are not also in the Torah, that are only also in the Rabbanan, then you have to size up case by case and see, is this going to affect the loss of the property? If it's going to end up losing the field's going to get destroyed, the field's going to is going to suffer hefzed, so then under certain circumstances, those malachas derabbanan would be permissible. So the only way we were able to knock it down to being a derabbanan was only because the definition of Zereya in Chashavs and Shemitah are very, very different from one another. So getting back to the malacha of Zereya as it plays out in terms of Shabbos, all kind of watering fields, plants, etc. are going to be prohibited. The Rishonim quote a very real application, which begins really the background for many of the shahs we'll try to talk about in the next couple of moments. The Rishonim extend this to the following situation. What if a person is not literally planning on watering his grass right now, but he is doing an action that inevitably is going to water his grass? What is he doing? He's washing the tilis yadayim. So he's sitting in his backyard, and he wants to wash the tilis yadayim over his grass. So if you ask him, are you watering your grass? I'm not really watering your grass. I'm planning on washing the tilis yadayim. So this touches on a topic that, of course, we're going to talk about many, many times. That's the topic of Dovash Einu Miskaven and the topic of Psik Reisha. There is a general rule in the Shabbos that Dovash Einu Miskaven is permissible. What this means is, I am doing action A, and there is a chance that action B may happen. The famous example is, I'm dragging a chair in my backyard. There's no malach involved in dragging a chair, but if I make a hole in my backyard, that's a big problem. I make a hole in the soil. So I want to drag a chair, and there's a chance, there's a 50-50 chance that a hole may be made. So one time, Rabbi Yehuda says, you're not allowed to drag the chair. And Rabbi Shimon says, you are allowed to drag the chair. Why? Because Dovash in Miskaven is permissible, and we happen to pass like Rabbi Shimon. So it's Mutal Lechatchila Shal Lechatchila to drag the chair in the backyard, even though there is a chance that a hole may be made. Comes the Gemara and tells us that Moda Rabbi Shimon B'Psik Reisha, that Rabbi Shimon only said his opinion when there's only a chance that the malacha is going to happen, but if it's certain that the malacha is going to happen, then all bets are off. That's the famous term called P'Psik Reisha. Why is it called P'Psik Reisha? So the Gemara explains, Rabbi Shimon explained, that let's say a person says, I want to play with the head of a chicken, I don't want to kill the chicken, so I'm going to chop the head of the chicken off, and I'm not interested in killing the chicken. So the Gemara says, that's a joke. Because any and every time you chop off the head of the chicken is going to die. So you can't hide behind Dovash Einu Miskaven anymore. That's called the Psik Reisha v'lo Yomos, question mark. Obviously, it's going to, obviously the chicken is going to die. So that principle becomes the guiding principle concerning Malacha Zareya as well. If a person is sitting in his backyard and he wants to start to wash the tilis yadayim, so we cannot hide behind Dovash Einu Miskaven because you know that the grass is going to grow. So since we know for certainty that the grass is going to grow, that would become a very, very serious problem. There is a further question in the Rishonim, which again we're going to keep on talking about because it comes up just about every single malacha, and that's the following. Maybe one could argue that when is a psigresha prohibited? That's what's called a psigresha, the nichalei, when in the end of the day I am happy with the result. What if I'm not so happy with the result? What if I couldn't care less about the result? That's what's called a psikresha delo nichalei. So that is a big machlokes of Rishonim. What is the status halacha of a psikresha delo nichalei? And that plays out now in terms of our washing till she died over the grass. So if it's my grass, I'm very, very happy about the grass growing. If I wash the tzedakah with the grass, then we have to prohibit it. We cannot hide behind davashen miskaving. We have to label it as a psikresha, and it's the worst kind of psikresha. It's a psikresha de nichalei, and that would be problematic. What if it's somebody else's grass, not somebody who I particularly care for? I'm not interested in taking care of his backyard, and I want to wash the tzedakah there. So then, we're dealing with a lower level problem. We're dealing with a psikresha de lo nichalei. What are the parameters of the psikresha de lo nichalei? So that is a big machlekes of Rishonim. So there is a safe called the Sefer HaOruch. The Sefer HaOruch was written already before the days of the Rishonim, the days of the Gaonim. And the Sefer HaOruch is of the opinion that every time you have a psikresha de lo nichalei, that translates to mean it's muta lechatchila. So it's hetagoma, muta lechatchila, according to the Sefer HaOruch, to go to somebody else's backyard and to wash the tilsi daim there, knowing full well the grass is growing. It doesn't matter. I'm not interested in watering his lawn. I'm interested in washing my hands. I know for a fact the water is going to cause the grass to grow a little bit more. It doesn't matter. It's called the psikresha de lo nichalei. And Tosfos, whenever they quote the opinion of the Aruch, always disagree. Tosfos writes that's not true, that a psikresha de lo nichalei is not prohibited mid the araisa, but it is still prohibited mid the rabbanim. Why that should be so, hopefully as the shiurim continue, we're going to try to understand the lomdos of that machloikas a little bit more, because it impacts on many, many different malachas. But for our purposes, it's a machloikas between the Aruch and the Baalei of Tosfos. The halacha, we accept the view of the machmir.
If you're dragging your chair and it makes a hole, but you don't want the hole, is it okay?
So if you're not even sure it's going to make the hole, then it's mutar even lechatchila. If it's a very, very, very heavy chia that you know for a fact is going to cause a hole, and you don't care about the hole, then it becomes a psikreishal nichle, becomes subject to that machlokes as the Aruch and Tosfos. Very good, excellent. So how do we pass in the halacha? So the Shulchan Aruch writes that there were some people who used to sometimes rely on the Aruch, and the Shulchan Aruch writes it's not really right to do that. Maybe, but Mikra din, we don't really follow the Aruch. We try to follow the view of Tosfos, which was the majority view seems to be that one should not just call it a day and say, well, it's a psikreishal nichle, everything is great. We should try to be machmir like Rava Rishonim, like she does at Tosfos, and others, that a psikresha lo nichalei is still prohibited mid the rabbanan. So therefore, we would not let a person just simply wash the tzedakah in any place that he happens to be.
So as we
apply
that, they
apply automatic lights. Oh, yeah, we got a long one here. You're right. We are just, no pun intended, we're planting the seeds for these discussions. No, it wasn't a good pun, but that's exactly what we're trying to do. Sometimes you have a situation where a person may be causing a lot of water to end up on his grass, and maybe that may not be subject to the malacha of Zoreah. What would the case be? This is a sukkah shaila, a post-sukkah shaila. A person has a lot of water, let's say he has a shlach, he's covering over his schach, and he wants to undo the shlach, leaving out the oil, he wants to tilt off some of the water, he wants to pour off some of the water, and where is the water going to go? The water is going to go onto the grass. The question is that considered to be malacha of Zoreah? Nah. So this seems to be worse because it's a psikresha and it's his backyard. So we're asking for even more serious trouble. So should we prohibit that or not? So there are some poskim who say that maybe one can argue this is not considered to be malacha of Zoreah altogether. Why is that? Because there's just too much water there. But medevam amurim, we can talk about Zoreah. And you have a field that's pretty dry, and then you start to pour some water on it, so it's going to make the grass grow. If the backyard is soaked, it's flooded, it's underwater, and now I add another gallon of water to it, nothing's going to grow any better, it's finished. So once it reaches the point of being an over super saturated backyard, so one could argue maybe the Malacha Zoreah doesn't make any sense. Anyone who was in our backyard on the second day of Sukkot this past year will definitely appreciate what exactly a super saturated backyard was. That we'd have not to have a shlach, but I think we could have taken all the water from the Hakazak River and poured it there, and it wouldn't have made the slightest bit of difference because we had about as much water as the Hakazak River there. So the bottom line is if you have that degree of water, then it wouldn't be a problem. Sometimes.
So I guess what about if you start pouring it, like maybe it's not saturated yet to the first couple of drops?
Right, so you have to find somebody else to do that. The one who wants to be Michal Shabbos, he'll be the one to pour the first, and then you can go and discuss that.
Is it neutral because you're Michal?
I don't even know if you need Michal because you're not accomplishing anything. At the end of the day, the grass is not growing any better. Yeah, I don't think so.
What happens?
What happens if in someone's house they have a sump pump that pumps out onto the grass?
But well, but I'm not really doing that. I mean, I set up the system before Shabbos. That's a general question. We're talking about sprinklers. We'll get there. Any kind of system I set up before Shabbos that causes a Zoraya to happen. But in cases when I'm being Zoraya actively, so that's probably not considered to be Zoraya. Rosh Hashanah Menobach has another important kula. When we speak about pouring water onto grass, so Rosh Hashanah says that the Medivah Mamurim, when do we say that pouring water onto grass is a problem? That's when a person pours the water directly onto the grass. What if a person pours the water in such a way that he pours it onto something, and then it spills over in a couple of seconds, it itself goes onto the grass? So that usually touches on an issue called grama, when I do malacha almost in an indirect manner, in a little bit of a time delay kind of a manner. So that's a whole nother sugi. Now, grama is not an absolute green light. Grama does not mean, if it's grama, then it's mutar. Grama mitigates things significantly, turns things from their derisas into their derabbanan, but doesn't necessarily mean that it's mutar under all circumstances. But here we're dealing with almost like a combination of factors. We're dealing with something which is a psik reish in the first place. So it's not a davra b'chavin mahamish. I'm not literally doing it with intent. And not only am I not doing it with intent, but in a certain sense, I'm not even really doing it. So we're almost like combining together two features in Ufa Shabbos. I'm doing a malacha derech psik reish combined with a grama. So Shlomo Zalman says that he thinks that would probably be permissible. So that would become important for us also in many malachas, but that could become important for us in terms of the watering of the grass as well. So even though we would never permit you to take water and pour it directly onto your grass, but what if I want to pour water onto my deck? And I know that some of that water is probably going to spill over onto the grass, so according to Shlomo Zalman, that would be permissible. Even though it's a psik reisha, I know the water is going to eventually spill over onto the deck, but since it's being done in an indirect fashion, so that would probably be permissible. If I would have known that Pesach of Shlomo Zalman, I would say about 30 years ago, it would have saved me a lot of time on Fridays. And I'll tell you what, in my grandiose career as the counselor in Marsha Kollel, I think it was 7 years, seven summers, if I'm not mistaken, I served in that role. So I see some faces here who were probably Marsha Kollel at the time. So there was always a question of somewhat of an undefined role. What exactly is the job of a Marsha Kollel counselor? So one of the jobs was to make sure that the least amount of Chol Shabbos would take place. So some of my odds and ends jobs was, and we'll talk about these things as we go on, was taking the rice out of the salt shakers on Friday afternoon, making sure that the blocks were on properly. And one of my other honorable jobs was making sure that all the grass that had grown during the course of the week under the Netil Sidayim sink would be removed. Because those who remember the land of Marsha Kollel, when you wash the Sidayim sink outside, so I don't know if it's still there anymore, but in my day there was a sink outside. So right under that sink outside was a lot of grass, and the sink had many, many holes in it. And every time you wash the Netil Sidayim, you inevitably were pouring water onto the grass. So the question is that a problem? So if you own Kit Marasha, I think it's a massive problem, but if somebody really cares about that grass of Kit Marasha, so then that could be a secretion. Nichole, I really, really want that grass to grow. But most of the guys in the Kollel couldn't have cared much. Most of them didn't even know there was grass there. So for them, it clearly would not be a secretion. Nichole, but it would still be low Nichole. And according to most opinions against the Aruch, that would be a problem. So we would try to avoid Washington's a dime, and that would cause the grass to grow. So what I used to do is every Friday I would yank up all those couple of grasses and leaves that grew during the course of the week to as best as I could. So according to Rosh Hashanah, that would be all right. You wouldn't even have to do that. Because according to Rosh Hashanah, I'm not pouring the water directly onto the grass. I'm pouring the water into the sink, and then after a few seconds it's seeping out the holes and it's getting up in the grass. So we yesh makom b'chol. I don't know what the policy is in Rosh Hashanah at this point, but according to Rosh Hashanah, I think it would probably be okay. No. If you want to do it like a chil, that's not a segregation. That's a davar mechavin mamish. So that's a davar mechavin derech grama, which we pask in is still awesome in the Rabban.
If it grows every week, isn't there seeds underneath? So how does that help to prevent the little grass?
New chumra. Excavation of. Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. I don't know. I can't tell you. The kafal chait for something 30 years ago. It is this discussion that became the background of a very, very famous shaila that appears in the Sefer HaTruma, one of the Rishon HaGadol Baruch Sefer HaTruma, that there are more quotes in Hilchos Shabbos, where there are more quotes, the Baruch is saying that not only should a person not be watering the grass on Shabbos, but a person shouldn't even be eating on the grass on Shabbos in the first place. Why shouldn't a person be eating on the grass in the first place? Because when you eat, so you're usually going to be drinking. When you're drinking, so things are going to spill. So since put two and two together, so inevitably someone's going to spill on the grass. Chatzis and Shabbos, and that's going to be a problem of, again, to what degree of a problem is going to be, abundant ice, whatever you think it is, but potentially going to be some kind of a problem. Therefore, there are more calls for Bein Baruch, that's customary, not to eat on grass on Shabbos for that reason. So it's not 100% clear what exactly the concern was. Was the concern that the person, if you eat on the grass, so you're going to intentionally pour water in the grass, we're afraid you're going to wash the tefillah seudaim on the grass, that's what you're going to wash my mechamah on the grass, that's what we're afraid of, or we're afraid something's going to spill onto the grass. If the concern is that something's going to merely spill onto the grass in a, unintentionally, that's a little bit harder for us to understand, because even if that happens, it falls into the category what's called misasek. If a malach happens just by itself, I walked past the light on Shabbos and my arm banged against the switch and the light went on, that's not even a shogi. I don't have to bring a korban for that. I don't need a tshuva for that. It happened by itself. So we're just afraid a guy's going to inadvertently knock over a cup of water. That was the great concern. It's kind of hard to understand why we should be worried about that. But the Ramah does sound that way. The Ramah sounds that that is still part of the concern. So whatever the concern was, you're going to intentionally water the grass. Whatever the concern is, you're unintentionally going to water the grass. The bottom line is the Ramah does go from the Rishon that what you're not eating on grass.
You have a Masasek case where you kind of know it's going to happen every time.
You mean you kind of know it's going to happen? The question is, how much can you ask a Shalom Masasek? If I know it's going to happen, maybe it's not Masasek
anymore. Watermelons,
right, we mentioned this last week, right? If you drop the watermelon seed by mistake, then you probably, right. I don't know. I'm not sure whether that undermines the Sasek. I don't know. So whatever the presentation of the Ramah is, the bottom line is the Ramah quotes this from Rabbeinu Baruch, and that's what the fellows can assume. They want you to try to be careful about this. So the Mishnah Berurah has a line when he presents this Chumrah of the Ramah. The Mishnah Berurah throws out a line where he seems to say that when we say that the Ramah and the Baruch meant to be machmer for this, get somewhat of a far-fetched chashash, this is only true if it's your backyard. Because again, the stakes are much higher if it's your backyard. If it's your backyard, then we're dealing with the potential Dei Raisa. If it's somebody else's backyard, then the worst case scenario, it's only going to be the Rabban anyway. It's not going to be the Raisa anyway, because it's always going to be able to hide behind secretion lo nichalei, which according to the Aruch is actually mutl chatchila. And even we who say it's also, it's only worst case scenario, it's also with the Rabbanim. So the Mishnah Berurah seems to present that this whole chumrah of, again, it's very, very far fetched. Don't eat because you may spill. So that whole concern only makes sense when you're dealing with something that smacks of a potential deraisa. Something that, anyway, would never ever be could result in a deraisa because it's not even your backyard. So then maybe one could argue the whole chumrah, the whole minig doesn't apply. So it's based on this Mishnah Berurah that our Torah has a policy of having kiddushes outside. So that's why we permit having kiddushes on the backyard, on the grass. Because I think I don't want to take a vote, but I imagine that most people probably don't really care that much what the grass in the backyard looks like. Haraya, I haven't seen anybody come and mowing the lawn. There's a reason for that, because as of now, we don't have a lawn due to other concerns that we mentioned in the past. But since most people probably don't really care what the grass looks like in the backyard, so then for everybody else, it's probably considered to be a psikreshet lo nichalei, and vis-a-vis psikreshet lo nichalei, we could be mat there. Again, no one's intentionally pouring water there. That I wouldn't permit. But just to have your kiddush and eat your cookies and your cholent and have a cup of soda or something, so maybe that wouldn't be a problem. Mishnah Berurah quotes, those people discuss what if it's not water, what if it's wine, other kinds of beverages that maybe would kill the grass. So you got to go do a case by case. Would Diet Coke kill the grass? What it does to the grass may be doing to the insides also, but that's a whole other story. So would these kinds of other drinks affect the grass? I don't know, but water for sure would. So I think that we have a right to be maker, like this Mashmos of the Mishnah Berurah, that the whole Chumrah only applies to someone who cares about the grass. It's for this reason, so some people may have noticed over the years, that one person who in theory cares, besides my wife, the only one who really cares about the grass, but myself, who in theory I care about the grass, I care about the grass because my wife cares about the grass, and I care about the grass. So therefore, I try, if I can, not to have Kiddush on the grass. That's why I make Kiddush on the platform. I don't make Kiddush on the platform, so I should feel a little bit higher than everybody else to project my voice. I do it for one reason, is because I don't want to drink, I want to eat on the platform. That's why I usually bring my mezuzahs. I try to do that there as well. In the past, when we had once in a while, we have a simcha, we have a tent out there. So if the grass is covered with something, that's great. If the grass is not covered, so I used to take my own private coverings or in sukkahs before this grandiose newest addition to our sukkah in terms of our artificial turf. So in the free of the dirt, as of last year when we had the dirt and the grass. So whenever I would eat, and if I would eat in the shul sukkah or something, so I would always take a garbage bag with me. So I would put a garbage bag under my chair, so that way the one person who cared about the grass, so at least I would be chashish for the minhag of the Ramah. But for everybody else, I don't think it's necessary to be chashish, because I think for everybody else, it's considered to be a psik reish at the lo nichal. Now, Baruch Hashem, we've moved up in the world, we have our fancy grass, so I didn't have to bring my garbage bag when we ate there. We usually use the shul sukkah for our family, Shmirat Teres, it was the crowd. So for Shmirat Teres, we make all to sit on the grass, and we eat on the turf, and everything is a Shalama Yisrael. But again, this is all based on this Chumra of the Ramah, it's all an extension of the original din of the Mashmas Hazroim. So the basic din of Mashmas Hazroim is in this Deraisa, but it's done Derech, Derech Psik Reisha, then it can sometimes be Deraisa, sometimes Derabon, depending whether you like it or you know, or you couldn't care less about it. And then you have these extensions, if it's done Derech Chrom, if it's done in a way that's the ground super saturated, but it's done in a way that I'm not even doing it intentionally altogether. There's concerns, so then you have to try to figure out the details. But it's all rooted in the original din of Mashkes Hazroim, which again is all part of that original malacha, the malacha that we've, I don't know if we make a siman, we pretty much make a siman, the malacha of Zereya, that we spoke about the deraitas and the rabbanas and all the different ways that it plays out. Next, we continue.
If everyone
could
just help,
put
the shul back together. Thank you.